So we are in the midst of our Summer of Faith tour. I've given away a little bit of who we're talking about today. If you have a bulletin, if you don't have a bulletin online, which I didn't email, we are talking about Joshua and Caleb. Before we talk about them, before we start, again, I want to lay the foundation for this whole tour that we're doing. It's based on 11:1 of Hebrews. It is called by many the Hall of Faith. I prefer the Mount Rushmore of faith, but there's no mountain, but eventually there will be. And this is the perspective that I share with you each week to give you a foundation, because we have to deal with the surroundings, the culture, the aspect that we live within, and that our faith is not isolated from it, but in essence is amplified through it. And this is what I say. I say our faith is revealed through the framework of culture. We do not truly know what we can endure unless it is tested. It is tested by the time and the culture we reside in. Faith is not required in a vacuum, absent of trials and tribulations. Faith flourishes when tested. You don't know what the true capacity of your faith is until it is tested to its limits. I did not do this previously, but I continue to do this each week. I didn't do it the first time, which was weeks ago. Hebrews 11:1. Trust is being confident of what we hoped for, convinced about things we do not see. So this is the litmus by which everyone, the writer of Hebrews, is going to be talking about moving forward. Either my ear has changed or this earpiece has changed. To be confident, often translated as substance in the King James, is defined as a state of feeling certain about the truth of something. For something to be true, you would think it would be absolute. Unfortunately, in this day and age, there doesn't seem to be anything that's absolute. So we're certain of the truth. We're certain of the truth of God. We're certain of the truth of His Word. That it is a feeling or belief that one can rely on someone or something. In other words, it's firm. And then to be convinced, not the verb to convince people, but the adjective, which is typically translated as evidence. So to be convinced, you're completely certain about something, firm in one's belief with regard to a particular cause or issue. If you're provided evidence, hopefully that should be something that provides you confidence or allows you to be convinced in something. If the evidence is false, then we've got an issue. So this is the foundation for Hebrews 11. But interestingly, Caleb and Joshua are not part of Hebrews 11. But we're going to be talking about them today. I'm going off book, so to speak. You think there's a script, but today, the script is a little different. Thursday marked Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av, the day by which is the equivalent of September 11th and December 7th wrapped up into one, yet still doesn't come close to representing the tragedy Israel as a people and a nation would experience over the centuries and millennia. It is on this day that we were reminded of so much. It is on this day that we fast and mourn in remembrance of the destruction of the first and second temple. The first temple was destroyed in 586 of the Common Era. The second temple was destroyed in 70 of the Common, or before the Common Era, and the second temple was destroyed in 70 of the Common Era. Jewish people throughout the world see this day as one of the most tragic days in Jewish history. Imagine this. The White House was not destroyed once, but twice. Or Congress. Or pick a place. It was not only destroyed once, it was destroyed twice. But then you add, it was not only destroyed twice, but it was destroyed twice on the same day. Any actuaries in the room? You want to try to figure out the probability on that occurring? Maybe. In addition to the temple's destruction, not once but twice, many horrific things have happened to the Jewish people on or around this date. Two of them are listed in this tractate from the Talmud. The Bar Kokhba revolt from 132 to 135, where Rome defeated Bar Kokhba, destroyed the city of Bitar, and killed over 100,000 Jews. The Romans subsequently crushed Bar Kokhba and destroyed the city of Bitar, killing over 500,000 Jews on August 4th, 135 of the Common Era. So on or around, today is August 1st, keeping in mind you have two calendars that don't align, so the dates of one calendar versus the other will fluctuate from year to year. Then I've provided this list over and over again. 1095 of the Common Era, the Crusades declared by Pope Urban II, killing 10,000 Jews in the first month and destroying Jewish communities in France and the Rhineland, what is known as Germany today. 1290, Jews were expelled from England. 1492, Jews were expelled from Spain, causing one of the greatest upheavals in Jewish history due to the success of this community that resided in Spain. 4 years later, they were expelled from Portugal. 1555, Jews were forced into ghettos for the first time in Rome. 1914, World War I began on August 1st, causing devastation across Europe and leading the way for World War II. 1941, Nazi Reinhard Heydrich was ordered to enact the final solution on July 31st, the next day, Tisha B'Av. Deportations from the ghettos of Warsaw to Treblinka had begun. 1994, the bombing of the AMI Jewish Community Center in Buenos Aires, killing 86 Jews. The Israeli disengagement from Gaza began in the Gaza Strip, expelling 8,000 Jews who lived in Gush Katifa, August 15th, the 10th of Av. So here you have all these things occurring on or around this one day, a day that has lived in infamy, a day that continues to live in infamy, yet a day that was self-inflicted, a day that potentially should never have happened except for one fatal decision. I choose word fatal because this decision did lead to death. Death would occur over the centuries on this day, over and over and over again. It would be on Tisha B'Av that those who went to reconnoiter the land that Adonai had promised Israel, on whom one of them was Yeshua. It was on the day that they came back, that was Tisha B'Av, that they gave the bad report. We learn of Joshua. In Numbers chapter 13 and verse 8, he's the son of Nun. He's from the tribe of Ephraim. Joshua was one of the 12 selected, one from each tribe. And when Joshua heard the report that was given by the majority of tribe representatives, this is what happened. And this is the report. Bamidbar, Numbers chapter 13, verse 31. But the men who had gone with him said, "We can't attack those people because they are stronger than we are." And they spread a negative report about the land they had reconnoitered for the people of Israel by saying, "The land we pass through in order to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. All the people we saw there were giants." So here you have this negative report. And the response of the people who heard the report goes like this. Numbers 14, verse 1. At this, all the people cried out in dismay and wept all night long. Moreover, all the people of Israel began grumbling against Moses and Aaron. The whole community told them, "We wish we had died in the land of Egypt, or that we had died here in the desert. Why is Adonai bringing us to this land where we will die by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will be taken as booty. Wouldn't it be better for us to return to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "Let's appoint a leader and return to Egypt." This is the response of the people. You're keeping in mind, I'm going to share something with you in a minute, that it's like, weren't they listening to the original instruction? Here's how Joshua responded, starting in verse 6. It says that Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, from the detachment that had reconnoitered the land, tore their clothes and said to the whole community of Israel, "The land we pass through in order to spy it out is an outstandingly good land. If Adonai is pleased with us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us, a land flowing with milk and honey. Just don't rebel against Adonai, and don't be afraid of the people living in the land. We'll eat them up. Their defense has been taken away from them, and Adonai is with us. Don't be afraid of them." And yet, what did Joshua and Caleb do in response? They tore their garments. They grieved what the people were saying. It was so over the line, so to speak. And yet, Joshua's response only further angered the people who were considering stoning them. In verse 10, "But just as the whole community were saying they should be stoned to death, the glory of Adonai appeared in the tent of meeting to all the people of Israel." So God comes down. He was likely listening to all of this. The people's response, Joshua and Caleb, their response. And Adonai said to Moses, verse 11, "How much longer is this people going to treat me with contempt? How much longer will they not trust me, especially considering all the signs I have performed among them? I am going to strike them with sickness, destroy them, and make from you a nation greater and stronger." This is where God was saying, "I'm done with them and I'm going to start over with Moses." We read that it didn't occur. But without going into all the detail of what transpired, Adonai conveys this one important point in response to the people who ultimately rejected Adonai, not trusting in his word that the land would be theirs. He didn't say anything about having to go to battle. Yet those who were to bring a bad report confirming how good the land was, that's what he was asking. He wanted to see, okay, well, what is the land like? As we have shared with you during Torah study, we asked the question, spies or tourists? Regarding the 12, we had compared the nuances between Israel's first foray into the land and their second some 40 years later. The conclusion we drew from Moses' instruction to the 12 tribal representatives was for this purpose. The spies went to examine the land Adonai was giving them so that they could encourage the people to take the land. To their own demise, they rejected the land and Adonai. I think the adversary had some influence here. What God intended for good, the adversary corrupted. It would be the people's response to the report that would lead Adonai to proclaim the following. I have forgiven as you've asked, because Moses interceded previously. But as sure as I live, and that the whole earth is filled with the glory of Adonai, none of the people who saw my glory and the signs I did in Egypt and in the desert, yet tested me these 10 times and did not listen to my voice, will not see the land I swore to their ancestors. None of those who treated me with contempt will see it. And then he goes on, how long am I to put up with this evil community who keep grumbling about me? I have heard the complaints of the people of Israel, which they continue to raise against me. Tell them this, he's speaking to Moses. As surely as I live, Adonai swears, as surely as you have spoken in my ears, I will do this to you. Your carcasses will fall in the desert, every single one of you who were included in the census over the age of 20. You who have complained against me. So in other words, this is the death that I'm talking about. This is the first aspect of death that the nation would experience in such a way because of this one decision to not listen, to not believe God, that they have, that they're about to take possession of the land. And this is how he establishes what will occur. It will be a year for every day you spent reconnoitering the land that you will bear the consequences of your offenses. 40 days, 40 years. Then you will know what it means to oppose me. I, Adonai, have spoken. I will certainly do this to the whole evil community who have assembled together against me. They will be destroyed in the desert and die there. The men whom Moses had sent to reconnoiter the land and who, when they returned, made the entire community complain against him by giving an unfavorable report about the land, those men who gave the unfavorable report about the land died by the plague in the presence of Adonai. Of the men who went to reconnoiter the land, only Joshua and Caleb remained alive. This was the first consequence. These were the first deaths associated with Tisha B'Av. You notice that a lot of our songs today focused on the land. I had no idea Ted was going to be here today. But keeping in mind, there is this intimate connection between God's promises, the people, and the land. To where to ignore, to reject God's promise directly impacts the people. Yet God's covenant that he established with them is what ultimately restores them. The covenant he made then, the covenant that he promised, the new one, would also be relative to the position of the people and their place, either inside or out of the land. We're going to see later on in Deuteronomy that God's going to make a promise to regather the people that he scattered from as far as can be seen, from the east, the west, the north, and the south. Because the land had already been promised by Adonai. So there's no, how put it, there's no dispute amongst God and Israel. Because in Numbers 13:1 it says, Adonai said to Moses, send men on behalf to reconnoiter the land of Canaan, which I'm giving to the people of Israel. Nowhere in there does it say you have to go to battle. Nowhere does it say you have to overcome anything. What's God doing? He's giving it freely. God will ultimately go before them. But keeping in mind, because of their rejection the first time, now they're going to have to physically take possession of it, and we'll see that later on. The whole book of Joshua documents it. Yet what should have been a day of rejoicing when the men returned from the land with an encouraging report, ultimately turned into a day that would become the root of many evil acts enacted upon the nation and the people of Israel. There was just one thing they had to do. Receive the good report. That was it. We tend to make things more complicated than they really are. Oh, this is too good to be true. Now, we just can't go in where the Canaanites are and all these other people and take possession of the land. There's got to be more to it. There's more between the lines than what God is saying, which I am giving to the people of Israel. That's it. He made the promise to Abraham originally, another father of a faith that we have shared, that I've talked about previously. Yet how hard is it for us to receive? I know of people that you try to bless them. They have problems receiving it. What do? They reimburse you for everything you ever give them. I speak from experience. I'm not naming names here. So Joshua trusted in Adonai. And as we have seen by his action, he grieved at the people's reaction when he tore his garments. Joshua was literally by Moses' side from the time they left Egypt. When we first read of him in Exodus 17. In Exodus 17:8, it starts off, "Then Amalek came and fought with Israel at Rephidim. Moses said to Joshua, 'Choose men for us, go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with God's staff in my hand.' Joshua did as Moses had told him and fought with Amalek. Then Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. When Moses raised his hand, Israel prevailed. But when he let them down, Amalek prevailed. However, Moses' hands grew heavy, so they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. Aaron and Hur held his hands, the one on one side, the other on the other, so that his hands stayed steady until sunset. Thus Joshua defeated Amalek, putting the people to the sword." So this is where we first experienced Joshua. He was selected by Moses. Go and take the army of Israel with you. What do we know about him before? Not much. This is the first time he's mentioned. You might consider Joshua a general of the army, and that he followed the orders of Moses when going into battle and ultimately succeeded. We saw him go with Moses when he went up to the mountain in Exodus 24. Adonai said to Moses, "Come up to me on the mountain and stay there. I will give you the stone tablets with the Torah and the mitzvot I have written on them so that you can teach them." Moses got up, also Joshua, his assistant, and Moses went up onto the mountain. We saw Joshua waiting for Moses while he was up on the mountain. Exodus 32:17. When Joshua heard the noise of the people shouting, he said to Moses, "It sounds like war in the camp." He answered, "That is neither the clamor of victory nor the wailings of defeat. What I hear is the sound of people singing." But the moment Moses got near the camp, when he saw the calf and the dancing, his own anger blazed. He threw down the tablets he had been holding. So this wasn't the first time that Joshua saw the people rebelling against God. Doesn't say that he tore his garments here. But you figure the more times it occurs, you finally get to the point where it's like, I can't take any more of this. During the first year of the wilderness, Joshua was a fixture by the side of Moses. In Exodus 33:11, Adonai would speak to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend. Then he would return to the camp. But the young man who was his assistant, Joshua, never left the inside of the tent. He learned from the one we looked at the week before, the faith of Moses he gleaned from. Moses was his teacher as well. Joshua ultimately learned from the best. So when it came time to go into the land, he had a much better and deeper understanding of Adonai than anyone except Moses. Being beside Moses gave Joshua a type of access where he saw and heard firsthand all that would transpire in how Adonai interacted with Moses. Yet just because Joshua had this enviable position doesn't mean he could just glide through. He still had to do the work. He could not ride Moses' coattails, just as we cannot ride other people's faith. He had to see for himself and believe. He could have very easily succumbed to the negative report of the other 10, but didn't, because Joshua trusted in the word of Adonai. Joshua was both confident and convinced in what was not seen. He did not see Adonai. He may have heard, but not directly. But he remained confident. He was convinced in what he did not see, that being the promise of Adonai regarding the land. He had seen what Adonai had done, and because of that, trusted in Adonai, not in the report of his fellow countrymen. Do you trust more in the words of other than the word of God? We're hearing a lot of that today. You have to be careful with what you hear. You have to test everything that's said. You have to verify. You have to confirm. So I want you to keep this in mind, because this brings us to the second person who offered a favorable report, and that is Caleb. The first time we hear about him is in Numbers 13:6, when he's identified as one of the 12. We know very little about Caleb, and that this is the first time his name is referenced in Scripture. From here, even though we don't know much about him, we will see him revealed to us. We won't see his faith developed, but we'll be introduced to it. As one of the 12 who would enter the land in order to report on it, his perspective was far different. In Numbers 13:30, Caleb silenced the people around Moses and said, "We ought to go up immediately and take possession of it. There is no question that we can conquer it." Is there any doubt? Is there any convincing that needs to be done? Does he lack confidence in what he just said? Again, we're being introduced to the faith of Caleb. We never saw it developed. In many cases, you don't see another person's faith develop when you come in contact with them for the first time. You're seeing a snapshot of where they are now, but you're not seeing the journey of how they got to here. One verse, a rallying cry to the people. Yet you can't unring a bell. And the bell of despair had been sounded. Yet Caleb was not convinced by the negative report of the others. In Numbers 14:5, again, Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before the entire assembled community of the people of Israel. Joshua, the son of Nun, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, from the detachment that had reconnoitered the land, tore their clothes and said to the community of Israel, "The land we pass through in order to spy it out is an outstandingly good land." I repeated this because this was the report of both Joshua and Caleb. They were in agreement. They spoke as one. At least that's how it's recorded. Even Moses couldn't unring the bell. But this didn't destroy Caleb. Others could not rob him of his trust in Adonai. He did not succumb to the mob. But what did he do? He remained faithful. Numbers 14:24. But my servant Caleb, because he had a different spirit with him and has fully followed me, him I will bring into the land he entered, and it will belong to his descendants. A different spirit. Sounds intriguing, doesn't it? As one who believes in Yeshua, you have the same spirit Caleb did. It did not come upon you at certain times, but better yet, it resides within you all the time. John 15:26. When the Counselor comes, whom I will send you from the Father, the Spirit of truth, who keeps going out from the Father, he will testify on my behalf. What did the Spirit that Caleb had do? It testified on behalf of whom? Adonai. How did he know to give a good report? He listened and trusted the Word of God, and the Spirit that resided with him, he trusted. John 16:13. However, when the Spirit of truth comes, he will guide you into all the truth. For he will not speak on his own initiative, but will say only what he hears. He will also announce to you the events of the future. The Spirit that Caleb had, what was it doing? Announcing the events of the future. The land belongs to Israel because God gave it to them. And ultimately, they would take possession of the land. Verse 14 of John 16, he will glorify me because he will receive from what is mine and announce it to you. Everything the Father has is mine. This is why I said that he receives from what is mine and will announce it to you. That's Caleb. That's the spirit that he had. That's a spirit that everyone in this room as a believer has. And hopefully everyone online as a believer has the same spirit as well. Joshua would ultimately succeed Moses and lead Israel into the land, finally taking possession of it. His name, like that of his predecessor, would be forever recorded and honored through our study of Torah. Millennium after his last footstep was taken. Caleb too would be honored in such a way, forever being remembered as a man of great faith and resolve for Adonai. He would be honored as one of the two providing favorable reports. His faith would be recognized by Adonai as well. Just as the tribes were given a portion of the land as an inheritance, Caleb received his own inheritance. It was like he was one of the tribes. He received his own inheritance because of his faith. Because he stood up. Because he spoke when the majority was against him. Yet he did not cower. He did not succumb. This is how it's recorded in Joshua 14. Starting in verse 6, the descendants of Judah approached Joshua of Gilgal and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and said to him, "You know what Adonai told Moses, the man of God, about me and you in Kadesh Barnea. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of Adonai, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to reconnoiter the land, and I brought back to him an honest report. My brothers who went up with me discouraged the people, but I followed Adonai, my God, completely. On that day, Moses swore, surely the land where your foot has been will be inheritance for you and your descendants forever, because you have followed Adonai, my God, completely. Now look, Adonai has kept me alive these 45 years, as he said he would. From the time Adonai said this to Moses, when Israel was going through the desert, today I am 85 years old. But I am as strong today as on the day Moses sent me. I'm as strong now as I was then, whether for war or simply for going here and there. Therefore, give me this hill, the one Adonai spoke about on that day. For on that day you heard how the Anakim were there with great fortified cities. Perhaps Adonai will be with me, and I will drive them away, as Adonai said. Joshua blessed him and gave Hebron to Caleb. So Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, as it is to this day, because he followed Adonai and God, followed Adonai, the God of Israel. So just as Joshua and Caleb remained united, completely following God, trusting in him and his ways, consider these verses. John chapter 15, verse 5. I am the vine and you are the branches. Those who stay united with me and I with them are the ones who bear much fruit, because apart from me, you can't do a thing. Unless a person remains united with me, he is thrown away like a branch that dries up. Such branches are gathered and thrown into the fire. In other words, what is? They've died, but they're in essence put to death completely, where they are burned up. And verse 7, if you remain united with me and my words with you, then ask whatever you want and it will happen for you. Caleb asked and received. Joshua asked, received. They were faithful. They remained faithful. The key is remaining faithful. If you learn anything from Joshua and Caleb, it's not about the process. It's about when you're confronted at a time where you are required to stand up, where you are required to speak the truth, regardless of who is around you. So let these two be an example for you. They're not in the book of Hebrews. They're not in chapter 11. But they're no less as monumental as an example for you. What does the writer of Hebrews say? He said, I could go on and on, but it would take up too much time. I don't have enough parchment to write upon. Hebrews wouldn't be 13 chapters, but 133 chapters. So keep this in mind, because we're continuing to build each week with another example. Someone that you can glean something from. Put it in your reserve that when you're confronted by such a situation, let the Spirit remind you and bring to the forethought of your mind, I remember Caleb, where he stood up and he spoke. And he was outnumbered. And they were going to stone him. What happened? God appeared. God showed up. The same is possible now. So don't lose sight of that. Because what we have in Scripture is not just a historical account, but it's to inspire us. It's to equip us. It's to strengthen us and prepare us for whatever comes before us. So keep these things in mind whenever you have a Joshua or a Caleb moment. Because trust me when I say, they'll be here. You'll see them. And if everybody please rise.